Welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Bombercast post round 16 edition. Unfortunately, coming off a 45-point loss, Bonce has decided he's had enough for this week. He couldn't handle it. So we've brought in regular co-host or guest host for this season, and that's Fair Bump Play On. How are you, mate?
I'm as well as can be expected after a weekend like that. Grizz, how are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, I feel like as every day passes since the game, I'm a little more relieved, I suppose, or not as upset. I've seen bad losses before, but there was something about the weekend that got my blood boiling, I think.
Is that something called the umpires?
Well, they might have something to do with it, and I suppose that's where we'll start, I think, this week, mate, because it was a 45-point margin and a lot of people were writing off the club and, you know, what may have happened over the course of the third quarter based on the final margin. And it's a bit disappointing for me because I thought we were in up to our eyeballs really, you know, until that sort of 10-minute mark of the third quarter, when there was, as Brad Scott would put it, a series of unfortunate events, which I thought was incredibly diplomatic by him. I want to talk just really briefly about the first half. I thought we clearly came to play in a lot of sense. I think one thing that we can't knock about the guys this year is that the effort and the defensive integrity for most parts, even against good teams, has been pretty solid. And that first half was as good as we've played against Geelong for a long time.
Yeah, it wasn't. I agree with, you know, we've turned up to start every game, and that's heartening. And a few times, including on Saturday night, we should have been further ahead. We haven't been making the most of our chances, but certainly, you know, could have easily been several goals ahead at halftime, and definitely turned up. And yeah, I do believe that momentum's everything in footy at the moment. And it, you know, it's easy enough, even if umpiring isn't a factor, to drop your head when you, if a team puts a couple of quick goals on you. But yeah, we certainly were right in it at the point when things started to unravel.
Yeah, and I think it's been the theme of our last sort of 4 to 5 weeks of football is that we're against Gold Coast and Carlton and obviously West Coast, we got the chocolates, but I think that's because they're not a great team. They're better than they were, but they're not great still. And now this week against Geelong, like, we're getting really good contested possession numbers and rebound 50 numbers, and we're transitioning the ball to 60 metres out pretty easily, but we're just not taking any toll for the weight of possession we're getting forward to centre. I think we had 60 inside 50s again this weekend, which when you think about it, is an incredibly high number. Our season average is 50-something, and it's pretty high up to have that amount, 60. You have 60 inside 50s, you should be scoring, you know, more than 9 goals. You're running at like 15, 16%, which just isn't going to cut it against a top 8 team.
There's a few different factors, isn't there? I felt like Saturday night, a lot of players down on form. You know, there's only 4 or 5 who really get a tick on my card. I thought Caldwell was great.
Yeah.
12 tackles to go with, you know, 32 possessions, clearly our best on by the length of the street. And it'd be good to talk about a few others in a minute, including Jones, because I thought there were some really promising signs there. But, you know, a lot of players down on form, one of whom was the skipper, who made a few really uncharacteristic errors. And, you know, I think wet ball, difficult night, but, you know, another instance where we really lacked fluency in the way that we're moving the footy inside 50. But we've got Langford down on form at the moment. And, you know, Wright, I think, started well, but is always just always. I feel like maybe I'm judging him harshly because I can see what he's physically capable of. And, you know, I think he could be destroying other teams on the semi-regular, but yeah, often gets hands to the ball and doesn't close it out. So I think that sort of a slightly too tall forward line, you know, is causing a lack of forward pressure for us, and we're not kicking the ball well inside 50. And, you know, we've got a few players down on form. So, you know, I think there's a few different reasons that for that forward 50 inefficiency, but they're definitely costing us because we're in a lot of other facets of the game, you know, turning up and competing really well.
Yeah, I tend to agree that we're too tall. I don't know what Scott's fascination is with two rucks plus right plus two mediums plus Harry Jones. Like, you're just too tall, and I feel like we haven't – our best sort of run of football came when we were playing basically – when Draper went down with injury, and that's not to say it's because Draper was out, but it's because we played one ruck, and we were basically playing Rice as the second ruck. And I think he kicked 50 goals a couple of years ago, and everyone's like, oh, the, you know, we found – I feel like that's probably his ceiling as – as an individual year. I think we need to stop looking at Peter Wright as a genuine number one key forward and start thinking about him as, you know, 70-30 forward ruck. And he's really there as a relief ruckman that is going to get you, you know, he averages about 1.6 goals a game over the course of his career, which I think is about right. So if you're getting, you know, 3 goals every 2 weeks from him, you're getting 35 to 40 goals a year from your relief ruck, that's a good output. Especially for what we gave up for him and the effectiveness of relief rucks around the league as they go forward. If you can play a genuine ruck 70% and Peter Wright 30%, I actually think it's, you know, it's better for his confidence, and it gives us a better mix forward, because we're playing one ruck, we're playing Guelphy and Davey and Gresham and, you know, Menzies, these sorts of guys. And, you know, there's limitations on Menzies physically, and there's limitations on Davey at the moment in terms of his production. But the speed at ground level at least puts pressure on, and you're able to put, you know, the ball's not bouncing out like it was against Geelong. And I just think we need to get that mix right, because we're winning the ball far too often and getting far too many into our 50s for not enough toll. And we're becoming a bit Melbourne Demons-y. And there's, yeah. And if there's one thing the Demons have shown us, is you can't just rely on a rigid defence and, you know, strong clearance and contested ball winning. If you're not in good shape forward or centre, you haven't got your structures right, then you can be the best clearance team in the competition like Melbourne is, the best defence like Melbourne has been the last 3 years, and, you know, you're going to go out straight set to the final. So we have to fix that, and I agree. Yeah, in terms of individuals, I thought Sammy Durham battled on. He had 10 tackles as well, which he's just becoming ultra consistent in that role. Peter Wright kicked a couple, but I thought generally we were pretty well held around the ground outside of Jai Caldwell.
Yeah, I agree. I think on rucks, you know, I think Scott realizes that neither Goldstein nor Draper are the complete package.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he feels like he owes Goldstein something, but, you know, Goldstein. He did some great things on the weekend, just some lovely little touches, ball on the ground. He's pretty smooth with his hands on the loose ball for a big guy. So, you know, you can see he's got strength still. Draper, I thought he's, you know, competed relatively well. It wasn't one of his worst games, but it's just the package. When you put, you know, two 60% ruckmen together and get 1.2 out of two, it's not quite enough. I'd rather have, you know, rather have one good one than two pretty okay ones and get the balance out. So I think that's an interim move, right? Like the in the future, no doubt, we've got Caddy coming on. I think there's a lot of excitement about what he'll be. And, you know, I can only imagine it's Draper or Brian as it stands in that number one ruck mode, one number one ruck spot, and with a more dynamic forward line with hopefully Caddy providing some excitement and Wright chipping in. Around the grounds, yeah, Durham not at his absolute best. I thought instructive for him to watch Patrick Dangerfield go about it. You know, a nearly suspended Patrick Dangerfield. You know, I hear he's quite influential in the AFL Players Association, but, you know, I'm sure that's got nothing to do with him getting off. But he just in the wet, his heart, the hard body, it was a good thing, I reckon, for Durham to watch, because it, you know, Durham's not dissimilar in the way he's going about it. But I thought Dangerfield was probably the difference on the night, in, just in terms of one, you know, half a dozen truly hard balls that turned momentum. And, you know, so Durham was good, competitive, but not at his peak. We mentioned Merritt earlier. I thought Dersma was okay in his return, and I think he'll be better for the run. Jones, 8 marks in, you know, in just under 3/4 of football, and I think he's going to be a player. I kind of believe in him. He's undoubtedly got a lot to learn if they're going to try and play him on the wing. You know, he's popping up and marking the footy well, which is great to see. He's also getting a bit lost at times, which is not surprising, but I really rate him, and I'm glad that they're trying to find a way to fit him in. But other than that, there was some pretty dark nights. Mackay probably also off the boil. Redmond didn't have a great night. You mentioned Menzies. He's, you know, they're trying him in a few different roles, and
yeah,
he made a few. There was a few Menzies clangers there along the way. Perkins out of form, so it's yeah. I know we'll talk about this week to come in a second, but you really, for us to have a good second half of the year, there's quite a few players who need to turn it around. And you know, you can, if you're glass half full, that means there's a fair bit of upside there.
Yeah, I think almost with the exception of a few players, the whole team had a dirty day. I thought the defense in general had a pretty poor one. I think other than maybe Andy McGrath, they probably all lowered their colours. You know, Ridley and Mackay included in that. I thought we'll talk about Harry Jones another day. I see why they're playing him on the wing, and I think it's fine as a stopgap, but I have significant concerns about that going forward, because I'd almost rather see if we can play him at centre-half back before we play him on the wing, just because the wings are such a damaging weapon now. If you have, you know, a wing with speed and skill, it's a real weapon. And, you know, he gives us a marking target, but it's sort of a waste of the position. I'd rather him just do that as a centre-forward or a centre-half back. And I've always wondered what he'd look like as a centre-half back. He's been taken to the football, and he can use his, you know, his aerial ability and his running ability to stay with a key forward, as opposed to have to lead to the play. But that's probably a discussion from other time. But look, we've gone, I don't know, 10 minutes already now, and we haven't talked about what I imagine most people want to talk about out of the weekend, which is the third quarter, and specifically the series of unfortunate events, or the series of, let's call them poor decisions by the umpires that when I would put it this way, and I know I've been couching it pretty gently so far, but it might have been the most incompetently one-sided stretch of umpiring I've seen since the 2016 grand final, when the AFL basically came out and apologised to the Swans after the final quarter in that game and how it was umpired. It wasn't just that there was a few bad decisions. It felt fair bump, and you can jump in whenever you want here, that there was almost a run of about 15 minutes where every single incorrect decision advantaged Geelong and disadvantaged Essendon. And I know there's been some clarification from the AFL, a couple of the decisions which have sort of broken my brain a little bit. But firstly, your thoughts on the third quarter and what effect you think it had on the ultimate outcome of the game, which was essentially, you know, 45 points.
The first thing I'll say is that stretch of umpiring really ruined my Saturday night, and I'm very angry about it, because I was having a great time. I was really looking forward to the game, and I was irate. It reminded me of junior football, where you've got a pretty inexperienced umpire and someone is mouthing off and really sticking it to the umpire, and they just put the whistle away and say, you know what, you're not getting any free kicks for the rest of the game, mate. And they just haven't, you know, all pretense of fairness goes out the window. I was trying to work out how I don't, you know, good shout on 2016, because I couldn't recall a quarter that was so one-sided in terms of those 50-50 decisions, and not just 50-50 decisions, but really costly ones that it really very directly led to a full goal turnaround at a critical point of the game. And, you know, as I said before, momentum's everything. And I do think that decided the game. It's not that we would have won necessarily, but after that, I think it was over. So that was really disappointing and very hard to understand, unless there was one of those sort of weird personal issues on the ground, because it went beyond the luck of the draw.
Yeah. My view of it is, there's been a couple of explanations about a couple, and we don't want to get into the minutiae of each decision. I think there's been enough media outlets that have pulled apart every individual decision that happened. The AFL's already come out and said the Draper non-free, the deliberate rush behind, the non-free against Jack Bowes were all incorrect. And so if you play the numbers game, you know, that's a couple goals our way, a couple goals off them. The margin at three-quarter time is within a goal either side. Now, the problem is when you start paying free kicks and not free kicks at all, like, you know, in Back to the Future where you move a chair and the whole thing looks different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that free kicks play, the game takes a completely different trajectory from that point. So you've got to be really careful about just this simple addition and subtraction of goals, because the game would have taken a different avenue. And that's sort of the point. Like, Draper gets that free kick, we kick the goal, we're 9 points up. It's a different swing of momentum the other way. And the biggest thing for me was it was just the umpiring was the difference in the margin at three-quarter time. The difference in at the end of the game was because we dropped our bundle as a result. Now, we can blame the umpires for the third quarter if we want, but we can't blame them for the fourth. And I understand there's, you know, people talking about it's hard, you know, to come back from that, because, you know, when that sort of stuff is happening, you go, okay, we'll knuckle down, tackle hard, win free kicks. Well, we're doing that. Jack Bowes and Tom Stewart just dropped the ball. So how much can you do, right? So there's all of that, but that fourth quarter was non-competitive, and that is not acceptable. So my very simplistic view is the umpires were the difference in the third quarter. Essendon was the difference in the fourth quarter, in the sense that they just dropped their bundle. And we can get upset at the umpires all we want about the third quarter. We can't blame them for the fourth. And
no, I think it just highlights.
I was just going to say, yes, it's that momentum. Yes, it's that confidence. But it probably just shows where we're at as a football club, because a genuine top four contender probably at least keeps it competitive from that point, whereas we did.
I totally agree with all of that, and particularly that last bit. We're in the top four still. I'm really happy with the year that we're having. It's much better than what I thought. And, you know, right at the top of tonight, you mentioned, you know, we turned up and we were in it, and we have done that week in, week out. And even when we're not getting the results, and at the start of the year, that's really what I was saying I wanted. I wanted to see a team that turns up every week, and whether we win or not, as long as we're developing and being competitive this year, I was going to be pretty happy. I am seeing that. And, you know, I think despite that, it's hard to believe that we are one of the four best teams in the comp. And, you know, that last quarter is probably, I agree, it highlights the gap between us and those teams that would have copped their hit from the umps on the chin and risen above it. And, you know, I think we getting over the line against some lower teams and, you know, pushing better teams, but not quite getting there. And, you know, we're just not able to overcome real adversity, even though we're generally hanging in. So, you know, I momentum shifted. We definitely have only ourselves to blame after three-quarter time. But, you know, I think it's a symbol of where we're at.
Yeah, and one thing I don't want to do is just take away from what that third quarter was. It was demoralizing as fans, and so fans who are venting about the umpires. And I think the ultimate thing about the umpires is it just feels like there's no accountability for it. Like, they reverse engineer explanations, and so we just get in this cycle of bashing umpires. And I'm not going to go as far as to say there's some sort of predetermined or some subconscious bias. I don't know. There may be something in the subconscious bias of maybe they thought us and were complaining too much. I don't know whether they, you know, I know umpires get coached about what to look for with certain teams. And so maybe they were just, you know, almost too vigilant on somebody that they'd been coached on throughout the week. I don't know what it is. And they just had a couple of absolute nightmares in between with the Draper and the rush behind. I don't know what it is, but.
Well, I think it's Devin Smith.
That, do you know, I've heard that. I've heard a few people say that.
Echo of Devin.
Yeah, I've heard a few people say that. So I don't think they're going to hold it against the club because of Devin Smith. Yeah, I don't know. Look, it's one of those ones where to take your lens on it, right? So zooming out, I picked us to have 9 wins for the season. We're at 9 wins now with, what, 9 games to play. So unless the bottom absolutely falls out, we've already exceeded expectations for me, because we're at 9.5 wins already. So,
yeah,
like, macro, this probably shows us where we're at. We've played Gold Coast away, Carlton, Geelong. Carlton and Geelong have beaten us pretty handily. We were competitive at points. We didn't take full toll when we had momentum, and the Gold Coast game was frustrating, but a similar sense. So, like, away, you need to take your chances. We didn't. Gold Coast came home over the top of us at home. It just sort of shows we're in that sort of 6 to 10 group. And that's okay, because I think we sometimes lose track of where we're coming from in terms of that back end of 2022 was horrendous. That back end of last year was so bad. like we are building from a pretty low base here, and there's probably, you know, a third of the list that need to get turned over before we're a genuine top four team. And speaking of genuine top four teams, we're playing one this week. We're playing the reigning premier on a Friday night, out of the frying pan into the fire, in terms of coming out of that big game against Geelong to now play Collingwood at the MCG on Friday. I tend to think that if we want, I know we don't think we're a top four team, but I think if we want a top six finish, we need to win this game, because if we can, you know, win this one, there's a few other games throughout the week that will knock other teams below us, behind us a game further if we win this, because they're playing each other. We match up pretty well against Collingwood generally. We had two tight games last year. We had obviously the draw to finish this year. I don't know what it is about Collingwood, but we tend to match. Oh, sorry, we didn't have a tight finish last year in round 23, but the Anzac Day game last year was tight. This game was the draw earlier this year. We tend to match up pretty well against Collingwood, and I want to see us win this. I know we're taking a macro view, but I think we're a genuine chance.
I think the one thing we've done well this year within games is, you know, not let teams keep runs of 10 or 12 goals. And, you know, I think the season, you can think about the season a bit that way. We've had this patch where we've won one of the last four, and honourable losses, you know, they're not something we're aspiring to. We're wanting to be better than honourable losses. So it is really time in the season to stop that momentum slide, you know, having we want to kind of get through this patch, having won two and lost three. And, you know, then there's the end of the season to get through. Whereas I agree, if we drop this one, we've, you know, dropped four out of five, and suddenly it feels like the bottom's fallen out of the season. And, you know, obviously becoming that a truly competitive side at the end of the year requires great talent on the list and to develop that talent well. But a big part of that is developing mindset. And, you know, I think Geelong, one of the things that was to in effect and against Geelong is we go into those games with a long history of being beaten up. And, you know, and I think for Essendon fans of the last few years, we also all have a sense that we're probably quite up for playing half a season. And, you know, it's very interesting to me how the team comes out on Friday night, because history says this is a time where we put our tail between our legs and sort of just start wandering off. So I will be fascinated as to how they show up. And if they do win, it will be a real big tick for me in terms of that sort of mental resilience that we need to build in line with, you know, getting guys to 50 games and getting them into the right age window and filling the holes in our list. We really need to be mentally tougher. So, yeah, let's see what happens.
I want to see us take a scalp, because I think this team's been working too hard and been too competitive against Carlton. And they were competitive in the first half against Geelong. We've obviously talked about what happened. And I think outside the Port Adelaide game earlier this year, where we were just blown off the park at Magic Round. Gather Round. Magic Round, the NRL Gather Round. We've been pretty competitive in most games. And so I want to see us take a scalp against a genuine opposition, because we had wins against GWS and wins against Adelaide.
The Bulldogs.
But they're sort of on the outside of the eight. So they don't look as good, even though when we beat the Giants, when we beat the Bulldogs, everyone's like, oh, look at Essendon. And a bit of a revisionist history says, oh, they're not actually good. They're not even in the eight. So I want to see us take a scalp, and not because I want to be seen as genuine contenders, not because I think we need the street cred from the media, but I think just for the club, just for the players to get a scalp that says, hey, we're not downhill skiers. We're not treading on the teams below us. You know, we can swing it with the big boys if we have it all going. Now, we're not going to have it all going all the time because we're not that team yet, but on any given week, we can. And, you know, we're a chance of knocking a team off in the finals this year if we can get a home final, we get the right matchup. But if we lose this and then, you know, we don't get over the top of Melbourne, then it doesn't matter if we beat, you know, St Kilda and Adelaide and the Gold Coast at Marvel after that. People are just going to be, the club itself is just going to carry this weight of, they're not for real. They're frauds until we beat someone. And so I'm not worried about beating them for the sake of our finals chances, but just for the mentality of the club to say, hey, we can do it. This is where we can get to, I think is really important.
Plus, I love seeing Collingwood lose.
No, that's added bonus. Look, great. But yeah, I just think it's really great for the psyche of the players to get a scalp, and especially the reigning premier on a big game on a Friday night.
Yeah, they're up and about at the moment too, Collingwood. So yeah, it would be a great scalp. And, you know, I think mentioned before, for me, it requires turnaround from a core group of players who have had largely good seasons. And, you know, often it's the line between winning and losing is pretty narrow. Even a, you know, 45-point loss to Geelong, it doesn't require too much improvement from that group to see us getting over the line. So, you know, I think if we're going to get there, I think they will go one ruck this weekend. Just have that feeling that Caddy might come back in. I think Menzie might be in a little bit of trouble. I feel like they might try to bring someone like Scheel in, you know, which would be... Yeah, it'd be really interesting. It's, I think we seem to need a little bit more grunt, I reckon. And, you know, I think that's probably a better mix, a little bit less tall, a little bit more dynamic, and you know, carry an extra midfielder in.
Yeah, I think Jake Kelly obviously missed late. So I imagine he probably comes in and his spot in the back pocket's taken by Jai Menzie. So I think that's a pretty easy swap. The question will be, if we do want to bring in Scheel, are we costing a midfielder? Are we taking a ruck out? And I don't mind the idea of taking a ruck out and shifting Perkins forward. I just don't think he's giving us enough in the midfield at the moment. And that's not to say he can't get there or he won't get there, but he's not that at the moment. And I think our midfield needs reinforcement. Jai Caldwell and Sammy Durham probably aren't able to lead the midfield just by themselves yet. And Zach's, you know, the book's out on Zach. Zach team are tagging him pretty hard. So if teams are going to tag Zach, we're relying on Durham and Caldwell, we might be in a bit of strife. So bringing in a Scheel or a Setterfield or a Hobbs or whoever it is, I think is a good plan. So whether it's Hobbs or Scheel in and a ruck out with shift Perkins forward, I think that's probably the best mix at this point. I still think we're slightly tall with Wright, with Langford, Stringer and Jones, because I just think Langford's carrying something at the moment. He's nowhere near, and Bont's mentioned it last week, so I'll give credit to him. He just looks like he's not as mobile as he was, and so he's playing sort of as his pseudo-key forward, which means we're playing very tall. But, yeah, we need more speed to catch up with Collingwood, because if you're too tall against them, you're in trouble. And if we bomb it down long like we did against Barris and McGovern against West Coast and we did against Tom Stewart on the weekend, Darcy Moore's going to pick us off and have a field day. So we need to be really mobile forward centre, but we also need to make sure we're hitting our targets going forward and leading up. And being too tall, I think, with a second ruck means we're more prone to bomb it long, because that's what you do when you've got tall guys.
You do, yeah. What's your tip for the weekend?
My head says Collingwood. My heart says I want us to win this and to shut a few people up. But wanting to do something and expecting it are two very different things. I always go with my head, so I'm going to go with my head. I'm going to say Collingwood by 3 goals, 18 points. But I've got this good feeling that if you're going to galvanise and get an emotional response, it's this week. If we're going to say, hey, boys, no, don't worry about the umpires. Don't leave it up to them. Come out firing, you know, with breathing fire and brimstone. This is the week to do it, surely.
Surely. You've gone with your head. I'm going to go with your heart. Going to go the Bombers by 10 points.
Excellent.
There's a bounce back available. Let's do it.
So we always have a crazy prediction. My crazy prediction last week was that Sam Draper would have a career best game against zero rucks for Geelong. Didn't quite go that way. So I'm going to back up again this week, though. I'm going to say Jakey Stringer against Collingwood, Friday night football, kick 6.
Oh, that's a big night out, isn't it?
Yes. I think his career best is 5. I think he's kicked 4 or 5 on a handful of occasions with us. So I think the big prediction is he goes 1's better. What's your big prediction for this week?
I'm going Scheel in and 30 plus possessions. I feel like he's been asleep for 3 weeks in, you know, having a massive sleep in, maybe some kind of winter hibernation. I think he's been going through the motions in the 2s, think there's a lot of latent energy there. So we'll, yeah, it'd be interesting to see him come back and make a statement, because I reckon he's been storing it up.
Yeah, and I suppose even if he wants to stay with us next year or potentially shop himself to suitors, big game against Collingwood on a Friday night will be a perfect way to do it, I think. All right, well, that's us for this week wrapped up. Fairbump, thanks for jumping on and potting with me tonight in Bonson's absence.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Grizz, and go the Bombers.
That's it. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and tell your Essendon supporting mates about us. And as always, go Bombers.